Chinese president officially welcomes his Iranian counterpart, Ebrahim Raisi, as Beijing and Tehran seek to strengthen bilateral ties. The Kremlin says that NATO is demonstrating its hostility toward Moscow every day and has become more and more involved in the Ukraine conflict. The United Nations says that more than 7 million children have been affected by the recent devastating earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. This is World News. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Now, beginning with our top story, Chinese President Xi Jinping has officially welcomed his Iranian counterpart, Ebrahim Raisi. Iranian president is there on a three-day state visit that aims to enhance bilateral ties. Now, in the meeting, Xi held growing solidarity and cooperation with Tehran, saying that countries have supported each other and worked together in the face of the current complex global challenges. He extended China's support for Iran in safeguarding its national sovereignty and independence, as well as resisting hegemony and unilateralism. The Chinese president said that Beijing would develop friendly cooperation with Iran no matter how international or regional situations change. President Raisi is heading a ranking delegation to Beijing on the first state visit by an Iranian president to China in more than 2 years. The two sides have signed a number of cooperation documents in the fields of agriculture, trade, and tourism, among others. Raisi also held talks with Chinese Prime Minister Li Keqiang and top lawmaker Li Shangsu. He will later meet with Chinese businessmen and Iranian expatriates. Now, political commentator Mohammad Narandi explains why deepening ties between China and Iran could help shape a new world order.
There is a convergence of interests between the major powers in Asia, because the West, the collective West, does not want to see its hegemony diminished. So Iran recognizes this, China, Russia recognizes, but so do other important countries in South Asia. Asia alone, through this natural convergence, which is being pushed forward even faster, largely due to the fact that the United States and the Europeans are constantly antagonizing governments and sanctioning governments, whether it's Russia, whether it's Iran, and increasingly China, and also by constantly trying to prevent India from establishing greater ties with these Asian powers. The United States and Europeans are pushing these countries towards greater convergence at a faster pace. So it's really the United States and the Europeans who consider this to be a threat. For the rest of the world, or the global South, Asia, what they want is their sovereignty. They want the ability to expand economically, to bring about prosperity, whereas the Europeans and the Americans want to remain the center of the world. So it is their aggressiveness and their hegemony that is the problem.
Now, moving on, now crossing over to the Belgian capital, Brussels, where NATO defense ministers have gathered for a meeting over Ukraine. The NATO chief has promised more support for Kyiv after accusing Russia of preparing for new offensives.
We see no signs that President Putin is preparing for peace. What we see is the opposite. He is preparing for more war, for new offensives and new attacks. So it makes it just even more important that NATO allies and partners provide more support to Ukraine.
We understand that sending fighter jets to Ukraine.
Stoltenberg also says that the alliance should provide Ukraine with the weapons it needs to win the war. He says the allies are discussing delivery of aircraft to the country, but he said that the top priority was to send more heavy weaponry and other military hardware. This after a Ukrainian president pleaded for combat planes during his recent European tour. Stoltenberg also accused Russia of planning a new major operation in Ukraine. Moscow has sat back, describing NATO as a hostile organization. The Kremlin says that the alliance is making its involvement in the Ukraine conflict even clearer by the comments. Russia has meantime dismissed an allegation by Moldova that Moscow is plotting to destabilize that country. The Russian Foreign Ministry has censured the claims as utterly unfounded. It blames Ukraine for stirring tensions between Russia and Moldova. It says that Kiev is trying to draw Moldova into a tough confrontation with Russia. And Moldovan President Maia Sandu has accused Moscow of planning to use foreign saboteurs to bring down the country's leadership. She says that Moscow is seeking to prevent her country from joining the European Union and use this in the war in Ukraine. The World Health Organization has described the recent devastating earthquake in Turkey and Syria as the worst natural disaster in a century.
We are witnessing the worst natural disaster in the WHO European region for a century, and we are still learning about its magnitude. Its true cost is not known yet. Recovering and healing will take time and a phenomenal effort.
In a virtual press conference from London, WHO director for the European region said that the UN Health Agency has initiated its largest ever deployment of emergency medical teams to the quake-hit regions. Kluge added that some 26 million people are in need of urgent humanitarian aid in Turkey and Syria. Over 35,000 people have been killed after the 7.8 magnitude quake and a powerful aftershock jolted the two countries last week. Nearly 32,000 of fatalities have been confirmed in Turkey. The Disaster and Emergency Management Authority there saying that nearly 200,000 people have been evacuated. The UN says that more than 7 million children have been affected in the two countries. Our Istanbul correspondent Rashan Zaglam says that there could be more people alive under the rubble, despite hopes for finding them are fading away 7 days after the catastrophe.
Actually, miracles are still happening, especially in the city of Adıyaman or the province of Adıyaman. And a man and his son were rescued after 177 hours. A four-year-old boy was rescued after 178 hours. Also after 177 hours, a young man, 35 years old, in Adıyaman was rescued. And in Antakya, a woman was rescued after 177 hours. So miracles are still happening, and the Turkish rescue teams are still continuing to search for people alive under the debris. They still have hope, especially with this weather. It is easier with the cold weather for people to stay alive more under the debris. Usually it is 7 days after an earthquake happens, but in hotter areas or hotter weathers, now, due to the cold weather and sometimes due to the snow and rain, people under the debris in a way or another are finding it easier to breathe, to stay alive. And some of them said that they were drinking from the water coming inside to under the debris, to them under the debris from the snow that was falling. So this is a miracle coming from God.
The UN chief says that Syria has agreed to open two more border crossings to allow an aid into militant-held areas affected by last week's earthquake. Antonio Guterres says the crossing will allow more aid and faster aid delivery from Turkey into northwestern Syria. Previously, the Bab al-Halwa crossing was the only conduit for the delivery of humanitarian aid into the region. Syria is concerned that the border crossings are used to supply Western arms to terrorists. On Monday, the UN Security Council held a closed-door meeting on the humanitarian situation in Syria following the quake. And here's what the Syrian ambassador to the United Nations had to say to the reporters following that meeting.
During today's meeting, I conveyed to the Council that the Syrian government has repeatedly expressed its commitment to deliver humanitarian aid to Syrians, whatever they are on the Syrian soil. And I also affirmed that northwest Syria is an integral part of Syrian lands, and that our people there are part of the Syrian people. And Syria will not accept that they be divided based on lines drawn by terrorist armed groups. Based on that, Syria support the entry of humanitarian aid into the region through all possible cross points, whatever from inside Syria or across the borders for the period of 3 months.
The UN also warned earlier that terrorist control of northern Syria are hampering the delivery of aid by Damascus. More than 4 million people live in militant control areas in northwestern Syria. In India, tax officers have raided the BBC's offices in capital New Delhi and Mumbai after a British broadcaster aired a documentary critical of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Police sealed off the BBC's New Delhi office after the raid. Spokesman for the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party accuses the network of engaging in anti-India propaganda. The spokesman says that the BBC should not spew venom while operating in the country. The broadcaster said in a statement it was fully cooperating with the authorities. The last month it aired a two-part documentary alleging that Modi pushed the police to turn a blind eye to the massacre of hundreds of Muslims in Gujarat in 2002. Modi was the state's chief minister at that time. Israeli violence takes the life of another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. 17-year-old Mahmoud Majid succumbed to his injuries after regime forces shot him during a raid in the Al-Farah refugee camp near Nablus. The incident happened the day after a 22-year-old Palestinian was killed by troopers in the same city. The regime has been conducting raids in Palestinian neighborhoods across the occupied West Bank almost on a daily basis over the past weeks. The crackdown has left nearly 50 people dead since the turn of the year. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance factions have held a conference in Gaza to drum up support for Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank amid the increasing Israeli aggression and use of lethal force against Palestinians. Ashraf Shannon also attended that event.
Hundreds of people attended a national conference in Gaza, which was organized by Palestinian resistance factions. The event aims to bolster the resistance in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. In recent weeks, extremist Israeli settlers and political figures, backed by regime forces, have been violating the sanctity of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds. Israeli forces have also killed and injured dozens of Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of 2023. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said the resistance in Gaza is ready to support the resistance in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank.
We will not leave the resistance in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank alone, and we will back them with all the necessary means. The occupying regime will not be able to divide the Palestinian resistance arenas. Last night, we witnessed unity in Gaza, Nablus, and Al-Quds.
Occupied by Israeli regime forces more than 55 years ago, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom.
Actually, Al-Quds is not just a word. It's something apart from our heart. So this conference asking and telling the world that this Israeli action against Al-Quds and West Bank must be stopped.
Palestinian resistance factions have expressed their unwavering support for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds. They also vowed to use all forms of resistance to liberate Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank.
We believe that the Israeli government, under the leading of Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, going to raising up the aggressive against our people in West Bank, in Jerusalem, in Gaza also, maybe in other outside countries also. So we are going to resent the occupation by all kind of resistance.
Observers say the international community has failed to help Palestinians in Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank while turning a blind eye to violations committed by the Israeli regime against them for decades. Palestinians say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Bahrain's top cleric, Sheikh Isa Qassem, says that the anniversary of the country's 2011 uprising is an occasion to spread the message of unity. The cleric says the Bahraini people need to amplify their efforts for change. He blasted the Al-Khalifa regime for marginalizing the people, also denouncing the violation of the rights of political opponents and other dissenting voices held in jails. He said that some of those being freed from the jails are either physically disabled or mentally tortured. Sheikh Qassem was addressing the Bahrain nation on the eve of the popular uprising that began in the kingdom on February 14, 2011. People in Bahrain have taken to the streets on a regular basis to demand social equality and the end of the monarchy. The Manama regime has responded to the demands with an iron fist, clamping down on dissent. At least three people have been confirmed dead in another incident of gun violence in the United States. Five others are also hospitalized after the shooting at the Michigan State University. Some of them are in life-threatening condition. Gunman opened fire at several sites inside a campus and later shot himself dead. The university attack came nearly 14 months after a teenager killed four people at a high school in Oxford, Michigan. The United States has seen a surge in gun violence over the past years. Such incidents have killed 25 people since the beginning of the year. New Zealand has declared a national state of emergency as the most significant tropical cyclone in 25 years slams the country. Cyclone Gabrielle has lashed northern New Zealand with torrential rains and strong winds. Officials issued dozens of evacuation orders across the country's largest city, Auckland, due to rising water levels. At least 46,000 homes have lost power, while hundreds of flights have been canceled. Train and bus services have also come to a halt. Gabrielle is the second major weather event to hit New Zealand in a month. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The U.S. experienced more than 600 mass shootings in 2022, nearly double the number recorded 4 years ago when there were 336. This was reported by the Washington-based Gun Violence Archive. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International Roads, Americans not only kill other people by the millions, at least 32 million have been killed since 2001. They also kill their own by the tens of thousands. In 2022, the nonprofit group Gun Violence Archive recorded 43,789 deaths in 2022 related to gun violence in the U.S. Even children are not spared, as the latest figures released by Gun Violence Archive, GVA, on December 27, 2022, showed. At least 6,032 children, 17 years or younger, have been killed or injured in 2022 so far, according to GVA data. The GVA figures for 2022 show that 306 children, 11 years of age and younger, died by gunfire. Another 668 were injured. The figure for age bracket 12 to 17 provide an even more horrifying picture. 1,325 deaths and 3,732 injuries due to gunfire. This is the highest number of gun-related casualties since the GVA started keeping a record in 2014. The 2022 figures mark a notable increase in number of deaths and injuries since last year, when 5,708 casualties were recorded across the U.S. So far, there have been 609 mass shootings in the U.S. up to November 2022, according to GVA figures. Will these figures reach more than that number by the end of the year 2023? To equal the highest number of shootings recorded in the U.S., schools across the U.S. have also been targeted. On May 24, 2022, one of the most horrific school mass shootings occurred at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. Salvador Ramos, 18, entered the school and barricaded himself in a classroom where he shot and killed 19 students aged 7 to 10 and two teachers. Before arriving at the school for his shooting spree, Ramos had also shot his grandmother. She was admitted to hospital in critical condition where she died. Ramos was shot and killed by U.S. Border Patrol agents and UCISD officers after they breached the classroom. Families of the victims of Uvalde school shooting have since launched a class action lawsuit against local and state police, the city, and other school and law enforcement officials seeking $27 billion due to delays in confronting the attacker, court documents show. The lawsuit filed in Austin, Texas, states that law enforcement officials failed to follow active attacker protocol when they waited for 77 minutes before confronting the attacker inside a fourth grade classroom. While the most recent school mass shooting evolved was not the most horrific, it was preceded by such other school shootings at those as Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut on December 14, 2012, and the Virginia Tech shooting in Blacksburg, Virginia of April 16, 2007. At a Sandy Hook Elementary School, 20-year-old Adam Lanza arrived with four guns. He entered a first-grade class where he shot and killed 20 children aged 6 and 7, along with six adults, including four teachers, the principal, and the school psychologist. Two other people were injured. He also shot himself before the police arrived. In the Virginia Tech shooting, 23-year-old student Song Hoi Cho killed 32 students and faculty members in two separate attacks on campus. He also injured 17 others before committing suicide. On April 20, 1999, a school shooting and attempting bombing occurred at Columbine High School in Columbine, Colorado, that came to set an example for mass shootings at schools across the U.S. The perpetrators were two 12th grade students, Eric David Harris and Dylan Bennett Klebold. They murdered 12 students and one teacher before they committed suicide. It was the deadliest high school shooting in U.S. history at the time. Texas, Florida, and California have also recorded multiple school shootings. China Daily also reported in 2022 the U.S. again led the world in gun-related deaths, more than 20,900, including homicides and suicide, Gun Violence Archive says. And the U.S. has the highest number of guns per capita at more than 400 million weapons, meaning there is more than one gun for every man, woman, and child. Richard Burke, a professor emeritus of criminology and statistics at the University of Pennsylvania, told the Washington Post, "Many other countries have disadvantaged folks who are angry and alienated. But guns aren't there." Mass shootings in the U.S. have followed a predictable and superficial script, with a few exceptions. They produce calls for greater gun controls, including banning automatic weapons. Gun advocates defend the right to bear arms. There are instant monuments to victims, and there are candlelight vigils. The media profiles the victims and the shooter. The shooter's Facebook page or blog will be found, and perhaps a note giving a hint of why the shooting happens. And there are heartfelt comments from politicians from the local level to the White House. China Daily added, with few exceptions, most of the shootings fade from the national conversation, but the scenario unfolds again when the new one occurs. There are those who offer a radical solution: arm good guys to take on bad guys, and that is what is happening in the U.S. The increase in the number of public shootings involving guns is causing people to arm themselves out of fear. Gun sales peak after mass shootings, partly for fear of victimization and partly for fear of increased regulation. They rose after school shootings amid coronavirus shutdowns, racial justice protests, the presidential election in 2020, and after the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. There is deadly gun violence in the U.S. every day, and mass shootings, especially in schools, draw much more attention. However, those shootings represent a fraction of gun violence overall, said Gillian Peterson, an associate professor of criminology and criminal justice at Hemline University in St. Paul, Minnesota, and co-founder of the Violence Project, which studies mass killers. Mass shootings, Peterson told the Post, account for fewer than 1% of all people killed by firearms. They are very rare still, even though they're increasing. Mass shootings by design are meant to go viral, Peterson said. The goal of them is fame, notoriety. Public mass shootings have a psychological impact on people, instilling fear of going to movies or a grocery store, she said. While mass shootings draw attention, most gun deaths in the U.S. are either suicides or homicides, according to federal figures, with accidental or unterminated gun deaths representing a small fraction of the overall share. Almost 60% of gun deaths each year are suicides, the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention says.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Now let's listen to the speech of Sheikh Jafar Jafar.
I begin in the name of Allah, the most kind, the most merciful. It's due to that kindness and mercy that we have these opportunities where we gather in remembrance and glorification of Him, Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. I pray that all of you are well, inshallah, and that you are healthy, and that you are enjoying the blessings of this holy month of Rajab, inshallah. You know, often in life there are there are existential questions, you know, that are either put to us or that come into our own minds sometimes and that are important to answer. Questions like, is there a God, for example, right? What's the purpose of life? What happens to us after death? These are questions that are naturally occurring because this life is a journey. We find sometimes we come across events that we don't quite understand. And sometimes these questions are put to us by people who don't have a religious worldview, you know, who would like to find a crack in our belief structure. And so these questions are important. And we find that, alhamdulillah, our religion answers these questions. You know, I think more than anything that would bring comfort in our faith is that our faith is based on intellectual principles, right? Especially when it comes to our belief structure. I think I've shared this with you, and I'm not shy about sharing this, that, you know, when I was in university, I questioned my faith. You know, this was long before I took this journey, but I questioned my faith, right? Because this is something we've been doing since we were kids. Now, is it true? Because when you face all of these different ideologies, face all of these different questions, sometimes it does shake us, right? It does make us ask these questions. And I was fortunate, you know, that the advice that I got was to go and seek these answers in our own faith first, right? This is something that we've been practicing for a long time. We have many relationships in this faith. We have many contacts in this faith. And even though it may not have been concrete faith, there was still a faith. Call it a blind faith, but there was still a faith. You know, blind faith is still quite effective, you know. And the advice that I got was go seek these answers in your own faith. And sometimes I think what happens is that when these questions come to us, we go and look at Buddhism, Christianity. Baba, come here first, right? Come to your own home first. Seek these answers here first. And in most instances, you will find that our religion provide us answers to these questions, you know. And alhamdulillah, it brings a ton of satisfaction to know that what we are doing, what we are believing, what we are practicing has some intellectual proofs backing to it. One of the questions that comes about all the time that we get in our heads as well is the questions of tests and trials, right? Difficulties. Life is full of difficulties. Life is full of ups and downs. I don't think anyone ever has a life that is without some form of difficulty or the other. Again, I've said, like, if we were really reflective and we thought about things quite a bit, we would find that there isn't more than 24 to 36 hours that goes by without there being something that's a test for us. You know, that test could be big, that test could be as small as stubbing your toe on somewhere that makes you ask, ow, why? Why did this happen, right? But some things are always going to happen. They're bound to happen. And this is the way the nature of life is. And so the question, an existential question, is that why are there tests, you know? And not only why are there tests, right? Like, the second existential question that comes to us from a religious worldview is that you have a God who is merciful. Why doesn't this God prevent these things from happening, right? Because when you talk about tests and trials, these questions are really split into two. The first question is about the event itself. Why did this event happen? I think that question is a separate question from what we're trying to answer today. The question about why this event actually happened. Why did someone fall sick? Why is there poverty? Why was there a tsunami? Why was all of these things? There are multiple ways of answering these questions, right? Number one, I think, just because we can't just ask it and not answer it. That's one of my pet peeves, you know, when someone poses a question from the mimbar and then just leaves it and goes somewhere else. But to answer this question, we have to sometimes go into depth on it. We are very quick to blame God for some things. But many of the times the problems that we face are our own doing, right? It's the doing of our own actions, right? If I, for example, eat unhealthy and if I get sick, I can't blame Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for my illness, right? Like, this is my doing. If, for example, you have a country that has been provided tremendous amount of wealth, yet they don't look after their own people. Now you have poverty. We can't look here and say, why is there poverty, Allah? Allah will answer us back and say, didn't I provide for you, right? And so a lot of these things that do happen in our world are our own creation. They're not Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's creation. And the other things that do happen, right? There's like tsunamis and these type of things. The problem with us as human beings is that we have a very small, narrow view of things. It's either for me, if it's good for me, it's good for everyone else. If it's bad for me, it's bad for everyone else. When the reality is that we're not the only existence in creation, right? Like Allah has, everything is in creation. And so sometimes when some things happen that may not necessarily be good for me, it might be good for another creation, right? And so for the earth itself to be able to release certain forces so that there's not a larger catastrophe later is good in the grand scheme of things. But for me individually, it might cause some difficulties. You understand, right? And so that's the way we kind of answer those questions, right? And tests are relative, right? But the other question that I think still comes about, which is important, right, is that, fine, this event that happened to me was the creation of my own fault, or let's say someone else was reckless in how they were driving and they caused an accident with which I suffered, or there was poverty, or there was a tsunami, or there was something. Yes, okay, grand scheme of things, it's good. But this God who is merciful, why doesn't He just say pause? Right? And not allow it to happen, right? Like if you had the ability to just hit pause and remove the person from the line of the accident and then continue, right? Like we see in movies and things like that, right? Like, so why doesn't God just do that? And so we have to answer this question, right? To figure out that what is the purpose behind these tests? I think for a very simple understanding, yet it's I think quite important if we reflect on it, is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, regardless of the event, whether this event is my doing or someone else's doing, is not really concerned about the event. Events will happen every single moment of our existence. Imagine if God tried to interfere in each one of these things. God is not concerned with the events. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is looking to see how we respond to these events. Yeah? What is my response? Is my response of a person of faith? Is my response a person of understanding? Is my response of patience, of satisfaction, the things that God has told us to try to be and have? Or is my response frustration, anger, violence, right? What is my response? And the response is the test. The event is not the test because we're not in control of the event.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi عليم حال حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to the U.S. media, the level of suicide among American youth is devastating. The suicide rate in the United States has increased by about 30% from 2000 to 2018, and this is the highest suicide rate among the rich countries of the world. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. CNN Cable News Network has covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has released data showing an increase in suicide rate in the United States. CDC data showed on Friday, 10th of February, that after a two-year decline in the number of suicides, those deaths went back up in 2021. The data showed that 48,183 people in the U.S. committed suicide in 2021, indicating a year-on-year rise compared to 45,979 deaths in 2020 and 47,511 deaths in 2019. CDC reported that the record high for suicides in a single year came in 2018, when 48,344 Americans took their own lives. The report noted that there was a disparity between the different races and age groups in the United States, and the number of suicides among the youth and black Americans was significantly higher than others. The CDC specifically pointed out that the number of young black Americans who have committed suicide over the most recent three-year period was alarming. The report stated, suicide rates among persons aged 10 to 24 years increased significantly during 2018 to 2021, particularly among black persons, from 8.2 to 11.2, a 36.6% increase. The report noted that particular concern with younger black Americans is mirrored among the 25 to 44-year-old age group of different ethnic groups. Hispanics also saw a 19.4% jump, while suicides for non-Hispanic multiracial Americans in that age range rose by 20.6% over the same time period. Julie Goldstein Grummet, Vice President and Director of the Zero Suicide Institute at the Education Development Center, told Yahoo News, "It's much more helpful to understand data at this segmented level because it really helps us to design the right research and the right interventions for the future." She called the figures disheartening, adding, "It's challenging to realize that in some populations suicide is just growing so exponentially. In the meantime, suicide is four times higher in men compared to women. Experts attribute this to the fact that men are more likely to use lethal means and have more difficulty in seeking mental help." The Center for Disease Control, the CDC, data fails to provide a breakdown of the deceased by their social status and level of income. In the United States, suicides have been cited as a leading cause of death. USA Today has also covered this story and tells us more. A federal analysis found suicide rates increased and disparities widened in 2021, returning to pre-pandemic rates after 2 years of decline. Notably, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC's analysis, found the rate of suicide among American Indian and Alaska Native people increased 26% from 2018, followed by Black and Hispanic people, who saw 19.2% and 6.8% increases respectively. CDC researchers said the data raises concerns over access to care and pandemic struggles. The lead author of the report, Deborah M. Stone, told USA Today, "We know that certain groups have been already disadvantaged and have had inequities in suicide risk during COVID-19. These increases are very concerning and point to the need for really some dedicated prevention efforts targeting those racial and ethnic minority groups using culturally relevant programs." The CDC analysis released recently compared rates from 2018 to 2021. In 2021, 48,183 people died by suicide. According to the report, that year the overall age-adjusted suicide rate rose to 14.1 deaths for every 100,000 of the population, returning to the peak seen in 2018 of 14.2 deaths per 100,000 population. In 2020, the rate was 13.5 deaths per 100,000 population. American Indian and Alaska Native people had the highest age-adjusted suicide rates at 28.1 per 100,000 of the population, up from 22.3 in 2018. Suicide rates among Black people increased from 7.3 to 8.7 per 100,000 of the population. Among Hispanic people, the suicide rate increased from 7.4 to 7.9 per 100,000. Black children and youth aged between 10 and 24 saw the highest increase, 36.6% of all age groups and racial groups measured. American Indian and Alaska Native people aged between 25 and 44 saw a 33.7% increase. Asian people saw a 1.5% relative increase, which the report noted was not statistically significant. White people were the only group that saw an overall decline of almost 4% compared to 2018. The suicide rate was 17.4 deaths per 100,000 in 2021. The lead author of the report, Stone, and her colleagues wrote suicide rates might be stable or even decline during a disaster, only to rise again afterwards. As the nation continues to respond to the short and long-term impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, remaining vigilant in prevention efforts is critical, especially among disproportionately affected populations, where longer-term impacts might compound pre-existing inequities in suicide risk. CBS News has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to estimates published by the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics, preliminary data suggests suicide rates in the United States had not significantly improved overall through the first quarter of 2022. However, rates varied widely in several states for 2022 compared to 2021. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has long tracked disparities in rates of suicide. In 2020, even as suicide rates declined amid the first year of the pandemic overall, the agency had found suicide increasing among Hispanic men and non-Hispanic multiracial women. The report's authors wrote, "Suicide is a complex problem related to multiple risk factors such as relationship, job, or school, and financial problems as well as mental illness, substance abuse, social isolation, historical trauma, barriers to healthcare, and easy access to lethal means of suicide among persons at risk. Citing an analysis published in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, the authors also cautioned that suicide rates have been seen rising after other disasters, even after appearing to immediately plateau or fall. The authors of the report wrote, as the nation continues to respond to the short and long-term impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, remaining vigilant in prevention efforts is critical, especially among disproportionately affected populations, where longer-term impacts might compound pre-existing equities in the suicide risk. The report breaks down the data only by age and gender, but previous CDC data has shown that some groups are more vulnerable than others, including Native Americans, veterans, and those living in rural areas. Mental health has also deteriorated significantly among the youth during the pandemic, with more than 40% of teenagers saying they persistently felt sad or hopeless during the past year. Major pediatric health groups have declared a national state of emergency in children's mental health. The new national suicide hotline, 988, saw a 45% spike in calls in the first week after its introduction in July of 2022.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The second phase of the revolution statement addressed to the Iranian nation on the occasion of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran by Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. In its first step, the revolution turned the disgraceful regime and the tyrannical monarchy into a popular and democratic state and employed the element of national determination, which is the essence of comprehensive and genuine progress, to the heart of the country's governance. Then it turned the youth into the main forerunners of the developments and the key players in the management of the country. It conveyed the message of we can do it spirit and belief to everyone. Thanks to the enemy's sanctions, it taught everyone to rely on domestic capacities, and this unfolded a source of great blessings.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Firstly, it guaranteed the stability and security of the country, the territorial integrity, and the protection of the borders which were targeted by the enemy's Syria threats, and gave rise to the miracle of the victory in the eight-year war, leading to the defeat of the Ba'athist regime and its American, European, and Eastern supporters. Secondly, it acted as the country's regime in developing the field of science and technology, and in creating the vital economic and constructional infrastructures which continue to grow more prevalent day by day. Several thousands of knowledge enterprises, several thousands of infrastructure and necessary projects for the country in the areas of civil engineering and transportation, industry, power, mining, healthcare, agriculture and water, millions of universities, graduates or students, thousands of colleges and universities throughout the country, dozens of big projects such as the nuclear fuel cycle, stem cells, nanotechnology, biotechnology, etc., all ranking among the top of the world, developing 60 times more non-oil exports and nearly 10 times more industrial units. The quality of the industrial sector advanced tens of times more than before. The industry that only relied on assembling and montage was transformed into domestic technology.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.